Time for a roundup of what's coming up to watch in the days ahead. Freelance pop culture journalist Jen Gannon and writer Henrietta McCurvey are here with their recommendations. Good afternoon, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Jen, before we get into this week, the big news for a lot of people will be that Sex and the City is coming back on TV in early December, sort of. I thought the two movies had killed Sex and the City off for good.
Yeah, I mean, in a way they did. They killed off the legacy, but I always treat the films like they're in this alternate universe and it's actually the TV show that is still the main story, because I just think that Michael Patrick King, who wrote both films, they were like a pantomime, and this reboot is very different. This is them trying to get it back to the roots of the actual TV show rather than the outlandish consumerism of the two films.
Okay, and what were the authentic roots of the TV show?
You can laugh and dismiss it as empty women's TV, but it was actually groundbreaking when you think about it. Like, you had discussions, real discussions, about abortion, about the pressure on women to conform to societal norms, about being single, about what it's like to age being single, about, you know, death when you're a single person, when you lose a parent. They were all discussed in Sex and the City, and there was also this sexual freedom and frivolity about it. It was a groundbreaking and a lot more important than people give a credit for.
Okay, Henrietta, were you a fan?
Not particularly. I didn't seek it out. If it was on the TV, and I would watch it, because I loved the clothes and I loved the setting, the enthusiastic drinking, the amount of time they all had to spend together, that all quite appealed to me. But I did always feel the four of them together made one complex human being. I never really bought into these four as being very distinctive, complex individuals.
Okay, so look, it's somewhere between the two of them. And Jen, this new series, what's it called?
It's called And Just Like That, after what Carrie always says when she's typing up her columns, amazingly living off one column as a freelance journalist. I want to know her secret.
Written on her bed. Thinking away there. And no Samantha this time.
No Samantha, no. Which to me is like the recent Spice Girls reunion without Victoria. It really doesn't feel the same. Like, she was an integral part of that show. She was the funniest character of all of them, and I can't think of it without her kind of dominating presence. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to learn from the mistakes of the films and maybe just, you know, have more characters in it that actually are diverse. Imagine a New York that is not solely made up of white people. So you have the comedy writer and essayist Samantha Irby. She's going to be included in the writer's room, and fresh off the boat writer Rachna Fruchtboom. So you have new characters like Sarah Ramirez's character, and they're going to play the first non-binary character as a series regular. So their character is Shay Diaz, a queer stand-up comedian who hosts a podcast that Carrie is actually a guest on. So that'll be interesting to see how they develop those kind of characters.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. Henrietta, the big movie release this week is House of Gucci, which had, well, I suppose, split opinion, to put it kindly. You've seen it. What did you think?
Yes, I did see it. And there's an interview actually with Mikhail Gorbachev in which he was asked to sum up the Russian economy in a word. And he said, in a word, good. In two words, not good. And that's pretty much how I feel about this film, because it's 3 hours of your life that you won't get back. But I didn't really want them back by the end, because it's ridiculous. It's full of melodramatic bling. But it's entertaining. I mean, it is definitely entertaining, and it has a great soundtrack. So it's directed by Ridley Scott, and it's a lurid new true crime-ish, like inspired by events chronicling the betrayal and murder that basically ripped the seams out of the Gucci fashion brand in the 1980s and 90s. The premise is that social climber Patrizia, who is Lady Gaga, marries Maurizio Gucci, Adam Driver, and pushes him to take over the family business. And so what if that means ousting his uncle Aldo, who's played by Al Pacino, and his cousin Paolo, who's Jared Leto. So it's that classic, you know, man leaves his missus for another woman, missus hires a hitman and has a husband murdered.
It could happen, the Pope. All right. Yeah. So look, enjoyable enough is what I'm taking from that. If we ignore the Italian accents.
The accents are hilarious, and they vary. Okay. I mean, some people are, and almost everybody is speaking English in an Italian accent, apart from some background characters who are allowed to have the odd ciao and che cosa, you know, so as if we're meant to sort of buy into it. Oh yes, they're all really speaking Italian. We're just hearing it in English. Jeremy Irons, he plays Maurizio's father.
Jeremy Irons is in it as well.
Yeah. Everybody's in it.
This is fantastic. Yeah, and he's actually, his accent is quite good, because it's sort of more a suggestion of otherness. Whereas Jared Leto, who apparently is a method actor, it's full on Dalmio. I mean, so apparently, he's, as a method actor, I imagine the only way he prepared for this was by watching Joe Dolce's 1981 hit Shut Up Be Your Face on a loop for 6 months.
So look, people could enjoy this on many, many levels.
I loved it. Thought it was like a massive ham sandwich. It's so hammy. It's like you don't need ham for your Christmas dinner. It's so good. Every single character in it, every person in it, is like they're in an entirely different film.
And speaking of ham and fabulousness, Jen, the new series of Selling Sunset is finally here. I know a lot of people will be very excited about that. It's next Wednesday it's dropping on Netflix.
It's this Wednesday. I've already watched it all. So if people out there haven't seen it, this is the time to catch up. It's just the illusion of work in this show, I think, is hilarious. Or actually, I call it the delusion of work. So it's about a team of real estate brokers. I call it the Real Housewives of Real Estate, in this swanky LA firm, the Oppenheim Group. And they look after the most sought-after properties, portfolios of the really rich. So it kind of satisfies your property porn desires as well as your average reality TV soapy madness. But it's made by Adam DeVillo, who is the man behind The Hills. So it does have that gorgeous sweep in cinematography and very clever editing that makes it, you know, it introduces you to the cast in a way that it's like this expensive perfume ad rather than just your average fly on the wall reality TV show. It's so engrossing. As I said, binged it all. It's all done for me now. So I'm just waiting for the next season to happen.
Okay, Henrietta, the idea of there being Netflix Christmas traditions is kind of scary, but the Netflix Christmas rom-com is kind of a thing now. And so there's one out this week, Single All the Way. I'm assuming undemanding but watchable.
Yes, it certainly looks from the trailers and what I've read about it that will pretty much do you with a box of chocolates on the sofa for the afternoon. So the idea is that a guy called Peter, who's desperate to avoid his family's judgment about his perpetual single status, he convinces his best friend Nick to join him for the holidays and pretend they're in a relationship.
Was this not the Netflix Christmas rom-com last year?
It's the opposite of the Kristen Stewart Christmas rom-com, The Happiest Season from last year. It's like the opposite of that plot.
I think it will be very interesting to see, does it avoid the traditional pitfalls of the genre, you know, like the common, because obviously this is a gay plot line and it has a more diverse cast, you know, because they do tend to be sort of very glibly heteronormative and horrendously lacking in diversity and very ambivalent about women in a lot of them.
Are Christmas rom-coms problematic, do you think, Henrietta?
Well, I think a lot of rom-coms, not just the Christmas thing, are. I mean, if you think like that classic trope of, say, somebody running through the airport to stop somebody leaving the country. I mean, if you played ominous music instead of a Christmas song, that would be a horror film. That would be more like a slasher. So, you know, and that line between romantic exertion and sexual violence often gets quite blurred in rom-coms. So Love Actually now gets hugely reassessed year on year as to how problematic some of its plot lines really are.
It's an interesting question then. Are we all bad people then for tolerating it at the time? Should we have showed it stop?
Well, I don't know. I think that's a really tricky one, because some of the things now you can look back on and go, actually, that was creepy even then. Like, there were some aspects, say, in Love Actually that felt creepy at the time. The guy showing up outside his best friend and his wife's door with a sign, you know, declaring his love for her. There were things that were always odd. And then there are also things, as with all programmes, that are of their time, and you have to view them as being of their time.
Yeah. Now, speaking of their time, Jen, so we mentioned the Peter Jackson's Beatles documentary Get Back a couple of weeks ago, but it's all there now on Disney, all 20 hours of it or whatever it is. I mean, I sat through the first one. There's lovely bits in it, but like, really, I thought he could have edited it a little bit more.
This is the problem with Peter Jackson. I mean, like, his King Kong was like nearly 3 hours long, and then Lord of the Rings, my God, someone needed an editor on that. I mean, these elves aren't, you know, that interesting. But this is the Beatles, so I think the problem with the Beatles is because it comes with so much baggage, as in, if you don't include everything, the fans will be up in arms. So I think there's a lot there for people, but as I said, a lot of it is just them hanging out. And then when in between it, when you get past that of just bands in a rehearsal studio, even if the band is the Beatles, you know, seeing bands in a rehearsal studio just knocking out the same song for hours, it's not that thrilling. But then you get moments where there's a moment where, you know, Paul McCartney plucks like a song out of the air and it ends up being Get Back.
When you sometimes see how the songs just seem to
evolve,
come together, there are amazing moments. I did think from the first one, the way George is treated, like, he kind of tentatively tries to say things now and again, and they're pretty good things and everything, but it's kind of like, you can see the attitude is, oh, shut up, George.
Between George and John, there's especially a lot of anger. And I think, you know, George was bringing up songs that ended up on All Things Must Pass, and to see them kind of dismiss him outright. And then you do see him, which is one of the things that Peter Jackson brought to the actual documentary itself, is when George actually leaves. Because in the original Michael Lindsay Hogg documentary, they left that out. But you see George wanting to get out of the band completely because of the way he was being treated. So I found that parts of it are very interesting. Or even something as beautiful as there's a moment where they're recording Two of Us and McCartney and Lennon just lock eyes, and there's something so special about witnessing that magic.
Like, you are in the room with them. It is incredible from that point of view. Okay, so that's Get Back, and it's on Disney Plus, and it's all there now, three parts of it. Henrietta, you want to talk about the Golden Girls, which has also popped up now on Disney Plus.
That's right, yeah. And in fact, there was an interview I saw recently with Cynthia Nixon, who plays Miranda in Sex and the City. And she said, I think it's revolutionary to do a show about middle-aged women with their aging lady bodies. And I was thinking, well, Golden Girls beat you to it 35 years ago, because it was all about four older women. So it has been circling the globe in daytime repeats, like, forever. In fact, T.G. Cahir is actually showing season two at the moment. And it landed on Disney Plus a few months ago. So it's a classic American sitcom, which ran from 1985 until 1992. There's 180 half-hour episodes across seven seasons. And the premise, for anyone who hasn't heard of it, though I'd be surprised if it's people who haven't, is that four older single women, three are widows, one is divorced, and they share a house in Miami. So the owner of the house is the Southern girl, Blanche, and she places an ad on a bulletin board looking for housemates. And Dorothy, who's played by the fabulous Bea Arthur, and Rose, played by Betty White, they respond. And in the pilot episode, the three are joined by Dorothy's 80-year-old mother, Sophia, who's played by Estelle Getty, because her retirement home burns down. Actually, in reality, Estelle Getty was a year younger than Bea Arthur, who played her on-screen daughter.
Right.
Yeah, though you wouldn't know at all the way she's styled. You wouldn't know that at all. So it's funny and soppy and glamorous and outspoken. And it's the four women just navigating life, love, friendship, financial difficulties. I mean, a lot of things other shows do.
So there was a heart of authenticity to it as well, yeah?
Yes, and actually one of the things really interesting to look back at it now, I mean, it's not unproblematic in what we were saying about things being of their time, but it really tackled social issues like gay marriage, addiction to prescription medication, teen pregnancy and AIDS. And this was at a time when Ronald Reagan was president and he wouldn't say the word AIDS in public. And they were doing a show about a character who had AIDS. So it was called A Wolf in Pastel Print for the way it smuggled in some social topics. And in fact, it reminds me a little bit of Maeve Binchy's writing. So smuggled in under the lovely story and the relatable characters is some serious social commentary, particularly in relation to the lives of women.
Okay, so we're checking out The Golden Girls on Disney Plus
Disney
now.
Plus.
Listen, Jen, we talk a lot about true crime stuff on Netflix and various places, but the Irish channels are starting to do this kind of thing and doing it very well. You're looking forward to the second season of an RTE true crime documentary series.
Yeah, The Case I Can't Forget. I thought the first season of this was really well made. It's a true crime documentary series. It's done, but it's done in a very sensitive, empathetic way. And I think there is that fine line in the true crime genre between being informative and then being very sensationalist. And I think this series manages to treat the stories about, you know, real people with the respect that they deserve. So it focuses on some of the cases that have stayed in the memories of, you know, the guards long after they've finished working to try to solve them. And last season you had the stories of the brutal murder of Mary Gough and the arrest of drug kingpin Larry Dunn. And it features these first hand accounts of the detectives who worked on these cases and the people that knew the victims. And, you know, it reveals, like, not just the story of the crime, but the dedication and the commitment that they have to try and solve these crimes. And this new episode on Monday, it sees Pat Murray reflecting on the investigation into the 2004 murder of Rachel Callaly and the pursuit of her killer, who ended up being her husband, Joe O'Reilly. And I think everybody's familiar with that case. And it's just a good way of getting the story told, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And also like an insight into how cops are haunted by these things and how they come to consume them. Okay, that's The Case I Can't Forget. And that's on 9:35 tomorrow night on RTE1. Henrietta, on a completely different note, but which will be very important to some people, Money Heist Part 5, part 2 of season 5, is that right? And this is huge, isn't it?
It has been huge, yeah. It's a Spanish crime drama TV series created by Alex Pina, and actually last year it was Netflix's most watched non-English language show worldwide. So if there is such a thing as a quintessentially Spanish heist drama, I think this is it. You know, it's not grittily downbeat or restrained like a British equivalent, or pared back and full of jumpers like the Scandi crime shows. It's a Don Quixote story about rising up against the system, you know, about being reckless and idealistic. The series is set after the financial crisis of 2007-2008, and which there was huge austerity measures in Spain as a result of that. So it's seen by many as a revenge fantasy, sort of allegory of rebellion against capitalism. So the entire series is traced to long prepared heists, one on the Royal Mint of Spain and one on the Bank of Spain, told from the perspective of the robbers in a real time like fashion, with flashbacks and time jumps and, you know, an unreliable narrator. In The Guardian, I remember a reviewer once referred to it as a glorious peaky blinders just with tapas and subtitles, which I think is probably being a little harsh on it, but it is really energetic and really enjoyable.
Okay, and if people haven't watched it up to now, is it one of those things that's worth going back and starting at the start and binging on?
I think it is, yeah, because there are a lot of characters and there's motivations revealed slowly as you go through it, so it's not just about the heists, okay. It is about the individuals, so I think you would be better off to go back to the start, yeah.
Okay, and so that's the last bit of Money Heist then. Is coming on Netflix on December 3rd.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the end. Henrietta McCurvey and Jen Gannon, thank you very much.